Today's the second week in a series we're calling The Church We're Becoming. Because The Church We're Becoming is a nice little way that we packaged our vision statements. We have 10 vision statements, and you have a card on your seat that tells you what all 10 of those are, and you have to memorize them this time next week. So don't ask me to remember them. So they're on your seats, so you can take them home. The church is an incredible gift to the world. Sometimes we don't act like it. Sometimes our predecessors don't like it. Sometimes our cousins in a different denomination or a different part of the world don't act like it. But I am telling you today categorically that the church is a gift to this world. And when she is healthy and when she is whole, she shines. And she's irresistible. I think over the years, the problem with the church is that we have a certain way of thinking and a philosophy about certain subjects and certain situations that happen that come along. And I felt over the years, and I'm talking like centuries now, that the church can fall into a habit of going into us against them. Like, I'm not like them because, you know, I do such and such. I pray every day and, you know, I wore a cross around my neck that I got from a top man for £2 in the sale. You know, I'm not like them because I have a fish sticker on my car. Come on, you're in this room. I know who you are. And often we can get into this thing of us against them. Or we could get into us or them. Like, who is it, God? Who do you want? Because it's either us or it's them. But the church is a gift to this world. I had a thought the other day about who is them. Who are they? Well, them, they don't often think like you think. They might disagree with you, or they might be polite about it, or they might do it to your face, but they don't always agree with you. They might not believe what you believe. They might not see exactly how you see it. They might give more than you at Children in Need on BBC. They might know you, or they might be complete strangers to you. They live in your home. They live on your street. They work where you work, and they have to sign off on your expenses or your holidays before you can take them. We live in a world of them because this is where God has placed you for such a time as this. Wherever you are, whether you're in work, at home, whether you're in a real career shift, whether you're whatever it is, you are here for a reason. And I am telling you that you are the church and you are a gift to this world. But yet sometimes we bunker down and we say, well, I don't like them and they don't like me. And so we're going to, you know, agree to disagree. I'm going to walk away from them, or I don't want to see them anymore. And we get into this little religious cubbyhole of us and them until eventually our frustrations of just how life panned out for us turn towards them and it becomes them, us against them. But I am telling you today that it is not us against them, it is us for them. It is you for her. It is you for him, whoever they are. It is not you against them. We can change the world we live in. I feel like I'm going to do a duet in a minute. I feel like I'm in a boy band, like I'm going to stand up. It's going to be a key change. You know what I mean? Yeah, be thou my. I can do it. Come on. I don't wear socks. I'm cool. Come on. I'm 30. I'm rocking it. Come on. Three stories. First story, forgiveness. Man, forgiveness is weird. I don't know about you, but I've forgiven a lot of people in my time, and I've rarely forgive myself. But forgiveness is strange where sometimes when something happens, I can forgive someone in like a minute. Sometimes it's even a couple of seconds. Sometimes someone comes, oh, sorry, I didn't do this or whatever. And I'm like, that's cool. It's cool. No, let's move on. Sometimes it's taken me years to forgive someone. And when we talk about forgiving, we understand that there is a huge myriad of situations and positions that we're put in that sometimes affect us more deeply than others. I don't know about you, but I have still got some forgiving to do today. Okay, so I want to read you something that Jesus said, because something that he said really annoyed me. So I want to read you how Jesus annoyed me this week. So here we go. It's in a book called Matthew, and the book of Matthew is written by... Yeah, Steve, that's right. Yeah, Steve wrote it, yeah. No, it was written by a guy called Matthew, who is much more qualified than I am, and he in accounting. And he said... And it's this account of being firsthand with Jesus, so we can trust this account of what is being said. So here we go. This is what Jesus said in the book of Matthew. You've heard it said, eye for eye and tooth for tooth. But I tell you, do not resist an evil person. And this is the annoying bit. You ready? You ready for this? Okay. But I tell you, thank you. If anybody slaps you on the right cheek, turn to them the other cheek also. Are you kidding me, Jesus? Like, are you actually kidding me? If I was there, I just would have looked at him blank and just said, no, Jesus, no. So, if someone slaps you on the right cheek, you've got to give them your other cheek. Now, what is cheek in the equivalent time now? Cheek to you might be someone that lied to you, okay? Or someone that betrayed you or criticized you. Someone who did something against you that was painful. I can't remember the last time I was slapped on the cheek. It doesn't tend to happen these days. Like, I challenge you to a duel, sir. Sly. It doesn't tend to happen these days. People just get passive aggressive and call each other on Facebook. That's kind of what happens these days. But the cheek is a symbol of some kind of wrongdoing to you, where you must not do wrongdoing to them in return, but take it and let them do it again. I mean, come on, somebody. How messed up theology is that? I mean, come on. What is that about? I remember this young guy I was really mentoring for many, many years. And I'm sure you have stories like this where you kind of just have felt the same. And I spent so many years just investing in him, inputting him. When he needed money, I gave him money. When he needed work or a job, I found him work and a job. When he didn't know how to wash his own clothes, I showed him how to wash. I taught the boy to pray. I welcomed him into my life. But for some reason, this guy just had a habit of continually either kind of falling short or just making a mistake. But me being... you know, the next guy, the next pope in line to the papacy, just forgave him all the time. Because I loved him, you know, and I still love him today. But I remember this one occasion where he said, oh, can we go out for a drink? And I thought, yeah, no worries. So we went out to Costa for a drink, where all great deep conversations go, you know. And so we sat around Costa, and then he begins to tell me of his greatest mistake he's ever made. And this is a massive bombshell to me. I don't know if you've been in this position. And he's telling me this mistake that will radically change his life forever and that's completely out of my control. And I was getting more hurt and more hurt. And it was really frustrating because I'd spent years investing in this guy and here he is again. I mean, I have four cheeks and he slapped them all and he's going around for a second round. What is going on? And I remember just getting so upset and so annoyed, and I was ready to say, you know, when you're just ready to, I'm going to tell you the truth, sonny. And I remember just hearing this voice in my head saying, forgive him, it's not about you. Forgive him, because it's not about you. All the time, and I wanted, oh man, if I could, oh, I wanted to so much more badly than I want a McDonald's McFlurry. Like, I wanted to just forgive him. Because it's not about you. Turn the other cheek. I don't know where you find yourself today or whether this is applicable, but I want you to know this. is that when I forgive someone, I free myself. And my freedom is the start of theirs. My liberation is the start of their liberation. Because I could forgive him and forgive my own mistakes in this situation, I was able to help him in his next season and try to set him up well. Somewhere along the way, the world taught us that you need to fight evil with evil. You need to fight violence with violence. We have a countercultural Christ on our side that says, you're not proving anything to anyone by getting down to that level. Instead, turn the other cheek, forgive, find freedom, and that freedom will then lead to theirs also. Why? Because it's not us against them. It is us for them. Second story. Pick a side. Pick a side. One of my favorite Bible characters in the whole Bible, and the Bible's not really a book because it's got 66 books, and if you've read the Bible, well done. You've read 66 books, well done. It's more like an anthology. This book is phenomenal, and you can get it on apps and on paper form. Anyway, so I could go on about that because I love the Bible, but let me tell you about a guy in the Bible called Joshua. Joshua is a military hero. He is a military hero, and he takes on the leadership of a group of people called the Israelites. And this is like 1,000 years before Jesus, so we are going way, way back. This is like the land of the Pharaohs, okay? And so he has taken the leadership of a nation on, or after Moses. Moses, if you don't know the story, he got, through God, he got the Israelites out of slavery in Egypt and allowed them to walk into a period of time where they could rid themselves of the past and embrace the future. Joshua is the guy who's meant to take that group of people, 1 million of them or so, and lead them into what's called the Promised Land, okay? Promised Land looks a bit like Primark when they got 50% off everything, you know? And so he's leading them into the Promised Land, and he's going to have to take this land by force sometimes. He's going to have to negotiate politically. He's going to have to fight wars and battles. He's going to have to go toe-to-toe with some of the most fortified areas in the whole of the Middle East. Joshua has got quite a tough job ahead of him. And this is what it says, a period in Joshua's life. Joshua chapter 5. Now when Joshua was near Jericho, Jericho is a city, one of the toughest cities he had to fight, and also the first city he had to fight. He looked up and saw a man standing in front of him with a drawn sword in his hand, as you do. What would you do at that bit? I'd just freak out. I'd be like, what is going on? Joshua went up to him and asked, are you for us or for our enemies? And this is what that guy says. He said this, neither. He replied, but as Kamwise, listen to this title. I wish I had this on my CV. I'd be so cool. I got 3 GCSEs. I had a pet dog once. And I'm also the commander of the army of the Lord. Amazing. Neither, he replied, but as commander of the army of the Lord, I have now come. Then Joshua fell face down to the ground in reverence and asked him, what message does my Lord have for his servant? The commander of the Lord's army replied, take off your sandals, for the place where you are standing is holy. And Joshua did so. Then the Lord said to Joshua, see, I have delivered Jericho into your hands. I love that. Verse 15, take off your sandals, because the place you are standing is holy. And I really felt as I was praying for you and preparing, even if you're listening from the gallery or on podcast or if you're here with us now, I wanted to say this. Is that what makes a ground holy? God does. And I want you to know this, that in your toughest situations, in your strangest situations, whether you're in the sky, on the floor, at work, at home, I want you to know that the ground you are standing on is holy ground because God is with you. And Joshua's taking a minute now to just think, hang on a minute, your commander of the Lord's army, so let's call him an angel, an angel, you're an angel, I'm not losing my mind. Are you for me? Have you ever asked God that question? God, I mean, what? Come on. What? Are you for me? Like, are you even real out there? You know, are you for me or are you for my enemies? God, why did you give them that job and I'm still waiting for mine? Why have they found that stuff, but yet I've not, you've not delivered on your promises? What's that about? I remember I was being at the top of the stairs with our three-year-old daughter, and she was trying to negotiate with me, okay? Negotiating with a three-year-old child. I have a tougher job than Theresa May does at this point in time. And so she stood at the top of the stairs saying, Daddy, would you... That's my impression. Daddy, would you like to jump on the bed or watch Tangled? Tangled's a movie. Would you jump on the bed or watch Tangled the movie? And do you know what I said to her? I said, baby... Neither. We need to go. Like, I need to get your shoes and I've got to get your coat. We're late. We're meant to be somewhere. No, 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 Daddy. No, 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 no. No, 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 Daddy. Do you want to jump on the bed or watch Tangled? Neither. Please, I don't have the will to live anymore. It's been 3 days trying to get you out of this house. Neither, sweetheart, because we've got to go, we've got a place to be, we've got things to do. And I think sometimes what we do is we come before God and we say, Daddy, Daddy, can I have this or this? And he's looking at you thinking, neither. Put on your shoes, put on your coat. There's things to do, there's places to go. Come on, somebody. And sometimes we arrive at this place, we are wanting God, we are just giving God an ultimatum, and God is saying, hang on a sec. This is not you against them. This is you for them. I love how the world and the media try and get the church to commentate on issues, cultural, societal issues, and we should have a voice in those. But what the media does, they pit the church against its critics and say, oh, they're saying this about you. What do you think about that? And sometimes I just want to say, do you know what? Neither. I'm for God and God is for you. And so I'm standing here today and I'm saying, hey, there might be a bit of an ambiguity to grace sometimes, but I'm telling you that Jesus came to seek and to save those of the lost. So what am I going to do? Am I going to stand on the sidelines of the pitch and hurl abuse at the opposition? No, I'm going to seek and I'm going to save the lost, just like Jesus sought out me and saved me. Pick a side. No, 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 no. No, no, no. It's not us against them. It is us for them. Third story, the morning routine. It was a normal day in his house. He woke up, he had a shower, he groomed his beard like all great men do, and he was getting ready for another day at work. It was just a normal day, really. It was a Friday, I think, and the sun was out and it was great. And him and his wife had a couple of kids, and so part of how he would help the house out, he would get the eldest ready, and his wife would get the youngest ready, because we all know that the youngest of the litter is always the most moany and the most whiny of all the children. I know, because I am the youngest. And so he's getting the oldest ready, getting clothes on. They have breakfast and they're getting ready for a good day, and he kisses the kids and he kisses the wife and off he goes to work for another day earning some coin. He leaves his house. He lives in a capital city, so it's always traffic out. No, it's not. What's it called? Congested, thank you. It's always congested. And the fact that there are really no pavements and it's just like a road and then a house makes it quite difficult sometimes. And so he's making his way to work. And for some reason, there's a different atmosphere in the city today, in the capital. And so he's walking down and he gets to one of the main junctions in the road. And he needs to cross over the other side because where he works is on the other side of the city. And he gets there and for some reason, it's cordoned off. And he's stuck at this T-junction wondering, what is going on? And then he remembers, today's a very special day. Okay, Ben, you can jump up on stage now because we're going to finish in a minute. And he remembers that today is a different day because today the Romans are having a crucifixion. And he's wondering to himself, oh, today's the day. Because he knows about Jesus and he's heard about Jesus and he may have met him before. And yet he now finds himself in the crowd of people who are hurling abuse at him. So he is on the street and he sees Jesus with an armed guard, because he needed it, walk up this street. And this street is a very significant and special street. It's now called the Via Dolorosa, which is called the Way of Light. It can also be translated the Way of Suffering, which is the point at which Jesus started as he picked up his cross, and where it's the route that he dragged it all the way to where he would die. Sometimes the way of light is the right way, but it's painful. So Jesus, who at this time is sort of semi-unrecognizable, he's been beaten to a pulp. He has bruises and scars on his back. They have placed this ring of thorns on his head to mock him, like King of the Jews. No, you're not. And so they put these thorns on his head in a circle, and he's sort of semi-naked. They've stripped him semi-naked and put royal colours on him as he's carrying his cross. And he's just tired, guys. Jesus is just tired. It's been a long week, and it's nearly done, nearly. But he just can't carry on the last mile. The Roman guards see this and they're thinking, "Come on, hurry along. We have a schedule here where we're gonna do this." Suddenly, Jesus falls, as he's done a few times now, just in front of Simon. This was a normal day for Simon, a normal morning. He woke up, he had a shower, he groomed his beard like all great men do. He was ready for a good day. It was a Friday, the last day in the working week. He kissed his children, he got the oldest ready, he kissed his children, he kissed his wife, and he said goodbye, and he walks on his morning routine. Suddenly now he bumps into Jesus, who is on the floor, and there must have been a moment where Jesus' eyes met Simon. Something in Simon changed him that day. Maybe the Roman officers saw that, so they decided to pick on him. So they got Simon and they said, "You are going to carry that cross up there, or else I'm going to beat you." And he's thinking, "Do I want to do this? Do I not want to do this?" And we don't know from the text. It doesn't give an inference whether he wanted to do it or not. It just simply says that Simon was forced to carry that cross up to the top so that Jesus wouldn't have that burden. Simon was enabling Christ to do his work. I thank God for Simon. Because without Simon, things might have turned out a little bit differently. And I thank every Simon in here who allows themselves to be interrupted by Jesus on a daily basis. Sometimes we are brought into what Christ is doing. At the most inconvenient times, sometimes Christ brings us into this way of light that we neither expected, anticipated, or maybe we don't even want at that moment. And we have a choice. If you're in here and you're not of faith, or you're still on kind of a middle ground, you get away with this. But if you're a follower of Jesus today, you need to hear that we need to enable Christ's work even when it hurts. Even when we suffer. And I'm telling you, when you are sacrificing and when you are giving, when you are opening your life When you are standing up for those who have no strength to stand, you are being just like Simon, and you are enabling Christ to do his work on this earth. God interrupts his commute. And I want you to know that Simon that day carried his cross. And I think Jesus spoke about that in the Bible somewhere. He carried that cross, and we must do the same. Thank you, Simon. I have a Savior. Thank you, Kevin. They found a Savior. Thank you, Darlene. They found a Savior because you gave, because you sacrificed, because you decided that for once in your life, it would not be about you. That you decided to forgive. That you did not choose a side, but you decided to simply love. Why do we do all this? Why do we forgive? Why do we enable Christ's work? Because it's not us against them. Come on, it's us for them. Amen. It's us for them. Why don't you stand to your feet? I'm just about finished now. It was 10 years ago. Wow, I was such a young man back then. It was 10 years ago that I sat in this church community in a very different hall, in a very different arena, a different space. And our senior leader, Dave Belfield, got up on stage and he starts to describe the church that he sees. And I remember being sat where I was sat in my little sort of duffel coat, my geeky journal, and my Bible that had backed myself like you do at school, because I thought that made me really cool. And I remember sat there listening to his voice, and he said, "Guys, for years the church has been known what it's against. But I tell you today that this church will be known what it's for." And those words moved me. Now I'm part of the leadership team here. And I am saying to you a decade later, in the hope that someone in this room would feel and see a vision of a church that could really change the world. And I'm saying, you know, people can criticize us, people can challenge us, but I will never turn against them, because this church will be known for what it's for, not just what it's against. And today we stand together in a wonderful space with a baton in our hand. It is our turn and it is our time to change Wigan and the Northwest in the name of Jesus. We started with the question, who is them? Who are they? And I want to talk about who is us, because it's us for them. Our vision statements perfectly describe this mission to be known what we are for in this generation and the next. And I wanted to read these to you. You've got them on your cards and they'll be on screen in a minute. And as I read this word, as I read these words, I want you to remember stories like I've shared three of my stories. I want you to remember your stories in your life and connect your life with what is going on in your community. The church we are becoming actively loves God and loves people. The church we are becoming is large enough to reach a region, yet small enough to touch the individual. Does that sound irresistible to you? The church we are becoming is relationally strong, but spiritually deep. The church we are becoming is a growing community, a multi-generational people. It's the longest sentence in the world, this, by the way. Is a growing community, a multi-generational people who are inwardly caring and outwardly reaching to the world around them. Hey, it's not us against, it's us. The church we're becoming inspires ordinary people to be all they can become and empowers them to achieve the extraordinary.
the church we're becoming is fun to be a part of. You want to be here. An energizing community in which to grow. The church we're becoming is vibrant in worship and powerful in word. The church we're becoming is God-pleasing and people-honoring, not the other way around. Is God-pleasing and people-honoring a house of generosity? Check this one out. The church we're becoming positively defies all expectations of it and is renowned for going the extra mile. And I want to tell you, the last one sums it up, because I'm telling you, wherever you are, wherever you go from here today, remember this. Are you ready? The church we're becoming speaks life, gives life, and brings life wherever it goes. Welcome to today's community church. Welcome to a new horizon. Welcome to a bigger vision. Welcome to new dreams. Okay. I wanted to pose to you a question before we finish. Who are you becoming? Who are you becoming? I want you to know today that there is life on the other side of a decision that you can make right now. That you are saying, Jesus, I believe in you. I can see that I'm becoming this person that I don't want to be, and I'm going somewhere I don't want to go. And I now see, Jesus, that when I meet you, I become something completely new. Set free. Not just partially, not just a little, but free indeed.
Thank you for listening to the podcast from today's Community Church in Wigan. You can listen to other talks like this, and you can find out much more about us at tcclife.com.